Come on, you can do it.
No, I can't.
All day. It's not one, it's another. Okay, so. First of all, the paper, the mentor business. I have sent you the name of a student that finished this program within probably the last 10 years and is out working in the field. And your assignment is to contact them and find out about their job. Basically, find out what they're doing. Find out what kind of IT stuff is happening at their company. But basically to contact them and find out about their job, ask them questions and that sort of thing. Most of the ones, mentors, are experienced. They've done this for a few years, so they kind of know what to expect. They are not there to help you with homework. They can't, probably may not know. For example, we're doing JavaScript now. They may not do JavaScript. They may not know JavaScript. They may script in some kind of operating systems type language or whatever. So they're not to help you with homework, but they are there to help you get information for this research paper that you've got to do. So the first half of the paper is going to be the result of interviewing your mentor. And the feedback I get from the students is they actually can, if they ask good questions, they can really get some kind of interesting information. The second half of the paper is I want you to research a career that you're interested in and write up about what you found out about that career. Okay? If you have trouble contacting the mentor, the first part of it can be late. The second part should not be late. Because sometimes the mentors get caught up on a project and they don't get back to you right away because their life is complex as well. So your first contact with the mentor, I ask that you send to me so that I know that you have made the attempt to get contact. And therefore, if you then tell me you had trouble, I know that you didn't start the night before the paper was due. Okay, so you should be sending out the email this week and asking the questions that you want to ask. And the questions are something about what they do for a job, you know, what their company does, those kinds of questions in IT, and just anything that interests you. I specifically do not give you the questions so that you can ask what interests you. You know, what's their typical day like? What are they involved in? That sort of thing. So that's the mentor paper. It's due November 12th. The second thing is I got a bunch of questions on assignment 2. So we're going to take a look at that. And if you have questions, chime in and answer them. First of all, this is pseudocode. And it is actually a pseudocode that I gave you in one of your assignments and asked you to play a computer and to come up with the answer, so you stepped through that and played computer. Now I'm asking you to write it in JavaScript. So I want you to take that pseudocode and I want you to turn it into a JavaScript program. Okay, so I want you to write that in JavaScript. Number 2. I referred to a previous program where you had to take in 3 scores and average them. And I should not have put an S on scores over here. But anyway, I basically want you to do something like this. You're going to have a loop, and the loop is going to have a condition on it. Inside the loop, I want a prompt to take in a score. And then I need you to take that score and add it to the total. I need you to increment the control. Let's say you're using count, you would add 1 to count. So I want you to increment the control and then you loop back. And so you're going to take in five numbers because there's a prompt inside the loop. You're going to add the five numbers to a total. Each time through the loop, you're going to add to the total. And then when you're all done, you're going to calculate the average and tell me what the average is. Okay? I don't need you to take in three things here. If you do, it's not wrong. But you only need to take in one. Okay? Because if you take in three and you do it five times, you're going to have to take in 15 numbers to test it. And you'd probably rather not do that. So this time, the condition is on, I want to do it five times. And we've seen lots of examples where you have a counter and you do it five times. If you move on to number three, I said redo it. But instead of taking it in five times, I want you to do the loop over and over again until the total is greater than 500. So instead of using the while count is less than, you're going to use while total is less than, and you're going to be comparing it to total. And once total is over 500, you're out of there. Okay? But you're going to be saying, I want to keep doing it until the total is greater than 500. So while it's less than or equal to 500, I'm going to continue. Then the fourth one is I want the user to determine when to end the loop. And I said have the user type in 000. If you would like to have the user type something else, that's fine. If you want to have the user type 999, or if you want to have the user type a Y, that's fine. I don't really care. I just pick 000. But if you prefer to have the user do something else, that's fine. The main purpose here is that I want the user to determine when to stop. So on number two, I want count to determine when to stop. On number three, I want total to determine when to stop. And on number four, I want the user to determine when to stop. Because those are the three things that we can use to determine when to stop. Okay? So I want those three things done. Then the fifth one, you have a product that's on sale. So let's say it sells for $100. And every day of the sale, so you've got a loop that's going to go through. Every day of a sale, it is going to drop 10%. So what would be the first day of the sale? A $100 item is going to sell for what the first day of the sale?
Less.
Huh?
I was saying less, yeah.
Oh. Well, now give me an answer instead. Okay, you've got a $100 item. It's going to drop 10%. So what do you expect to pay for it?
90.
Okay. And then it's going to drop 10% for the next day. So what do you expect to pay for it the next day?
81.
Because 10% of 100 is 10. 100 minus 10 is 90. 10% of 90 is 9. 90 minus 9 is 81. Yes, no, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. And then this one comes out at something like 72.9 or something like that. So we have another one down there. I think it's 72.9. But I don't want to subtract 10 every time. I want to subtract 10%. So 100 down to 90 down to 81, not 100 down to 90 down to 80. Okay, questions on assignment two? If you haven't started it, you may not have any questions. Remember, I am not here on Thursday. Carolyn is here. She'll be here from 9:30 to 3.
You can come in at any point for as long as you want and work and have her available to ask questions of. So use it as a catch-up day and try to get caught up some. Okay. Another thing that I said I wanted to mention was two uppercase. And so I'm going to open a file that says something, two upper. What did I call it? Game uppercase. So I'm entering, this is the game program. And I'm going to enter the one. Do you want to play again? Yes. And I put in a Y. Enter your guess, 5. Do you want to play again? I'm going to put in a lowercase n. Okay, so I'm putting in a lowercase n, and I'm saying okay, and it quits. Now, if I hadn't made this change, it would not have quit, because lowercase n is not the same as uppercase n. Lowercase n is not the same as uppercase n. So, I'm putting the code in, but before I look at the code, if I bring up a browser and I say I want to find uppercase in JavaScript, it comes up with these possibilities. And I'm going to go to W3 Schools. And W3 Schools says, okay, if you declare a variable called string and you set it equal to hello world, and then you set up a variable called res and say I want to take what is in string, convert it to uppercase, res will then have capitals in hello world. See it coming out down there. Okay? The two uppercase is a function, and it has to have the two parentheses after it, and it will take and convert whatever you put it attached to uppercase. So I said string dot, that attaches it to string, and it converts string to uppercase. So whatever is in string will convert to uppercase. Okay, so if we go back and look at my example, I came down here and I said, okay, take play again, whatever the user types in, and convert it to uppercase. So if the user types in a lowercase n, I'm converting it to uppercase. And now that it's uppercase, it's easy to compare to uppercase N. Okay? So uppercase N equals uppercase N, and it will quit. If I type in an A, it's going to convert it to uppercase. A is not equal to N. If I type in a Y, it's going to convert it to uppercase. Y is not equal to N. So it will continue on. But if I type in a lowercase n, it will convert it to uppercase. So what it does is it takes case sensitivity out. It eliminates the case sensitivity issue. Still have to type the right letter, but it eliminates the case sensitivity issue. Okay? So that's just something to note, because you're going to be writing a game, and I'm going to ask you to have the play again in the game. And so that's something to kind of make note of. That if you don't want your user to have to type in uppercase N, you can give them, I want them to type in an N, and I can convert it for them. Questions? Yeah?
It doesn't have to do with the uppercase thing. Because like over there it says, if the random number is greater than my guess.
Yep.
And then the else. What if I type in like any letters or stuff like that, it gets turned into your guess is too high?
Probably.
Yeah, so is there any way you can change
if you want to write more code in it, you can. Okay. You can write and say, if my guess is a number, basically you can say if my guess
is greater than 0 and less than 4, then I'll continue on. Otherwise, I'll tell you I said a number or something like that.
Okay.
So you can do that. A lot of what we write is not looking for a lot of user errors. And if you're writing professionally, you got to add in the stuff and assume that your user is an idiot. Okay? But if you are writing what we're doing, I don't make you put all that stuff in. But you do. You have to assume that, you know, your user is going to enter whatever and with no rhyme or reason to it. And you have to catch it if it's the wrong thing. Okay? And that's a pain in the neck. Before interactivity, you didn't have the user problem. And a lot of programmers cursed allowing the user to enter things in, because once you got the user involved, then it's a lot trickier.
I believe the phrase begins with the word cluster.
There's a whole load of phrases, so I don't know. Okay. November 10th, we're having, again, some IT professionals come in and talk about their jobs. And if you come and then write up a short write-up, and I'm talking about a paragraph or two, then you'll get extra credit. And it's good to accumulate extra credit. But beyond that, it would be really good to come and hear this variety of people talk about the jobs they have in the field that you want to be in. So it kind of makes sense to come and listen to them. So it's November 10th at 5 o'clock, and they're still debating what room it's in, but I'll put up the room as soon as I know it. Okay, I think that's my main catch-up stuff. Okay. So, now we're going to move on to JavaScript Assignment 3. Oh, no, it isn't. I forgot arrays. Duh. I got busy with catch-up, and I forgot the one thing I wanted to add that's new is arrays. So go to Programs and go into Department Array. The others you can look at. I'm going to go over this one. Okay, so it says Division 3 has 4 departments. Please enter the department number. Notice I have there 2. When I put up a prompt in the past, I have always put a 0 next to it. You know, put the thing (0). This time I decided that I'm looking for departments within Division 3, and Department 2 is the CI department. And I decided that if I were to ask people that I have association with in my classes and advising, most of them are going to be CI majors. So I'd make that the default. So if I just click OK at this point, it comes up and says the department is CI, because 2 was the default and 2 is department CI. If they weren't in department 2, then they should have had a 1 or a 3 or a 4 there, and it would have come up with a different department. Okay, so we're going to take a look at this code. Okay, this is an array, and there are multiple ways of doing an array. I'm giving you one. So I've got an array, and I'm going to call it Department Array. And I'm telling JavaScript to set it up, so I'm saying set up a new array. And the 4 here indicates that there will be no line beyond 4. See the 4 down here? That's the maximum. So that those match. The 4 here and the 4 there. Okay, so what I've got is I've set up an array. And an array is a series of things that all have the same name. Notice department array, department array, department array. So this the zeroth element is going to get me the message no department 0. If I type in a 1, and no
notice these numbers. I'm going to get BU. If I type in a 2, I'm getting CI. A 3 gets me CU, and a 4 gets me OF. Those are the four departments in Division 3. If I look at this one, what it is department array with the 2 in brackets. So department was 1. And that's where I wrote. Department array with the 1 in brackets. The top one is department array with the 0 in brackets. This number is called an index. It can also be called a subscript. It can also be called a pointer. Index being the most frequent name. Okay. So what I've got there is, you know enough about programming now to know that you can't use the same name for a variable twice. In other words, in JavaScript, if I set up variable amount and then I set up a second variable amount, it's going to say, huh, if I say add amount. Which one are you talking about? So it's not going to allow that. In Access, everything had to have a unique name. In JavaScript, they have to have a unique name. But here I'm going ahead and using the name department array multiple times. And the way I get away with that is I put a number inside the square brackets. So department array modified by 0 is different than department array modified by 1. They're different things. Department array modified by 0 has a value of no department 0. Department array modified by 1 has a value of BU. Department array modified by 2 has a value of CI. So they have different values, okay? And the computer doesn't get confused, because if I say department array modified by 2, it can find out what its value is. If I just say department array, it's going to give me an error, because it's going to say, which one? I don't know which one you're talking about, okay? So I have an array here that starts with 0 and ends with 4. So the number when I define it is 4, even though there are 5 elements. And that's supposed to say even, not event, but anyway. It's even though there are 5 elements, because one of them is the 0th element. I could eliminate the 0th element and it would work the same way. And I'll talk about that in a minute. So I have set up an array. Okay, and an array allows me to go into the array and extract a value. So now I come down to the script. And inside the script, I said I'm going to have department number. Now, there's a whoops. I didn't define variable department number. And again, should have, didn't. But it doesn't matter. Okay, it's good to do, it's the right thing to do, and I forget it a lot of times. Department number will be defined for me because it's on the left. So I am saying, take in the prompt, put it in department number. It says, oh, that must mean you need a variable department number. I will set it up for you. There's a few things JavaScript is forgiving about, and this is one of them. If I had tried to use it, like on the right side, or in an if statement here, without having already defined it, it would have yelled at me. If I had said if the common number is less than 5 and I hadn't taken in the prompt, then it would have,
I don't know what department number is, and I would have got the white screen of death. Okay? So, I got away with it. It's a good habit to put them in. I keep meaning to go in and add these, and I go home and I get doing other things, and I forget to put in variable department number, okay? But you're going to forget it too, so there. So anyway, now we get into the script. I brought up the prompt for department number.
And whatever department number they type in is gonna go in here. So if they took the default, and notice the default is right here, comma two instead of comma zero. So that means it's there. If they hit enter, department number became a two. Question? Oh, just clearing throat.
No, I was clearing my throat, but I also noticed something cool about the way you wrote it. You could do it both ways. If you could say, you could reverse it and say, if department number is greater than four, and
yes,
swap them.
That's right. Absolutely. I chose if department number is less than five, meaning it's valid. What I do not want is a number that will not be successful when it goes to the array. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4 will be successful.
So 4.
7 will not.
Yeah.
And no, and I want a whole number too. Actually, it would have been good to convert it to a whole number in case they typed in anything. But,
so if department number is less than 5, I say, okay, I'm going to do a document right. I'm going to write, the department is concatenated with department array modified by department number. So if they typed in a 2, then department number is a 2, so it says go and get department array modified by 2. So he goes and he gets a 2, and department array modified by 2 is CI, so it concatenates it with CI. And it prints out as it did up there, the department is CI. Okay. If they were to have typed in a 7, department number is not less than 5, it would take the else and write invalid department number.
Okay, so if you have it open on your screen and you type in a 7, it's going to come up with invalid department number.
Now, I said that I could eliminate, if I wanted to, the one for 0, since it doesn't have anything to offer. So if I decide that I want to eliminate that, I can do it. But at that point, I would probably add in here, and department number greater than 0, so that it would give me only.
Only if the department number was less than 5 and was greater than 0 would I try to get something out of the array. It would have to be greater than 0 and less than 5 to go to the array. Does that make sense? So if I come over here and I run this again, and I put in a 7, it gives me invalid department number. And if I run it again and I put in a 1, it gives me the department is business. Okay, so it will give me whatever I come up with. Questions?
Line 4, the meta, but I don't know what that.
Line 4.
Or meta, meta,
oh.
That equals UTF.
Yeah, that's a copy and paste. That means there's a whole lot of different character sets that can be used on the web, and I'm using the one called UFP8, which is the most common one. It's a copy and paste. That's a no think. Copy and paste. Questions? Okay, now notice this one also. I've got style in here, I've got a script in here, and I've got plain old HTML in here. Okay? So here's my style that made the background color beige and the color navy. Underneath the script, I've got the N, which is written in plain old HTML. The script is setting up the array.
and then using it. And I should have mentioned that in the other class. I forgot to tell them there's two scripts there. There's a script that is setting up the array, and there is a script that's using it. Now, I put the script to set up the array in the head. It didn't have to be there. It could have been down in the body. And then the script to use it was down in the body. And frequently people do that. If they're setting things up, they put it in the head. And if they're using them, they put them in the body, but they could both have been in the body. Okay. Questions? So, now your homework assignment. The first one I will let you figure out. Ask me a few questions. The second one, I want an array. So I want an array of five cities you'd like to visit. I want you to prompt the user to enter a number between 1 and 5, and then you will go to the array and extract the city. Okay, so you're going to have an array with 5 numbers and 5 cities. And you're going to go to the array and extract, okay? And I want to put in there that you can play again, yes or no. Okay, so you can choose again, yes or no. Okay. Number 3 is where we're going to focus for the rest of the time. That's writing the rock, paper, scissors program. And so we're going to write that. Okay, I assume you've all played rock, paper, scissors.
Nope.
Huh? Yeah, right.
Missing out.
Yeah, you really are. Okay, somewhere on the playground, somewhere around second grade, you must have played rock, paper, scissors. Okay? So, we have rock, paper, scissors. And there is a definite plan for that, which beats... You know, paper covers rock, scissors are crushed by rock, paper, scissors cut paper, whatever. There's a whole series of possibilities. So how many possibilities are there? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's like 9 possibilities.
Yeah, you're right. There are 9 possibilities. Okay, there are 9 possibilities. So, I'm gonna have a user and a computer. Okay, so the user and the computer are going to be the 2 players. So I've got 1 player that's keying things in, and I've got the computer that's playing. How am I going to generate the computer's number?
Probably pseudo randomly.
I'm going to have it randomly, not pseudo, randomly. I'm going to do a random number thing. Just like I did back on, and yes, I suppose it's semi-pseudo because life isn't perfect, but it's close.
I was about to say, computers can do randomness now? True randomness?
No, they come close, though. Close enough for government.
Ever been to random.com or random.org or something like that?
Okay, wait a minute. So we're going to go in, and if I go to programs... And I go to the guessing game that we looked at last time. Then I can see the random number generator. Okay, so this is my random number generator. Yep, eventually it had to do that. That's my random number generator. It was you that caused that, I can tell.
Most likely.
Yep, I think so. Okay. So there's my random number generator. And when I did this here, I was generating a number between 1 and 5. So So the way I coded the random, it would have generated a number from 0 to 4. And I added 1, which meant it went from 1 to 5. So if I want to generate a random number that goes 1 to 3, I'm going to change that 5 to a 3, and I'm going to get a random number generator that goes for 1, 2, and 3.
So that's where you go to find the random number generator. Okay, so where was I? Down here, that's where I was. I'm just going to make another one and leave what I have.
So I've got the user and the computer. And I've got rock, paper, scissors. Now, the computer is going to generate a number from 1 to 3.
So what I said was, I'm going to tell the user to type in a number between 1 and 3, because that's going to make my life a lot easier. If you really want the user to type in rock, paper, scissors, go right ahead. But that's going to be above and beyond what I'm requiring, and it's going to take extra code. So I'm going to put up my prompt to the user and say, enter 1 for rock, 2 for paper, 3 for scissors. And what that does for me is make my life a little easier, because the computer's generating a number, the user's generating a number, and numbers compare to numbers a lot better than comparing 1 to the word rock. Okay, that's not going to work as well. You have to do some conversion. Now, we're not going to use arrays in this problem. That was in problem 2. Although if you get into the more complicated stuff, using rock, paper, and scissors as words, you may find an array is helpful. Okay? So, the computer can be a 1. And if the computer's a 1, the user can be a 1. And what does that mean? It means that it's a tie. If the computer's a 1 and the user's a 2, what does that mean?
User. User wins.
Computer. User wins. Because the user has paper, and the computer has rock, and paper covers rock, right?
Or something.
So the user wins. And a 1 and a 3 is what?
Computer wins.
Computer wins. Because rock crushes scissors. So now, I'm going to go with 2, 2, 2 and 1, 2, 3, okay? Because
I could have done this the other way, done 1, 1, 1 with the computer and 1, 2, 3, with the user and 1, 2, 3 with the computer. Doesn't matter which one I did. But I'm saying 1, 2, 2, 2, 2, 3. So what's 1, 2? Who wins?
Computer.
Okay, what's 2, 2?
Tie.
Okay, somebody else. What's 3, 2?
The user.
The user. Because the computer has paper, the user has scissors, scissors cut paper, so the user wins. Okay, and then I've got 3, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so what's 1 and 3?
User wins.
Huh?
The user wins.
Okay. And what's 2, 3?
Computer.
Computer wins. And what's 3, 3? Tie. Yeah. So those are my 9 possibilities, okay?
So I can now start asking the questions to the computer about who's going to win and who tied and who and so forth. So, first of all, let's look, and do you see any common pattern there? Because otherwise I got 9 questions, and I'd like to cut it down a little.
I guess if you...
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we can cut down a third of it by making it so that if the user and the computer have the same number,
yep.
It's a tie.
Yep.
If the user and the computer have values that are more than 2 apart from each other, you can say that the one with the lower one wins, the lower value wins.
More than 2 apart, but there's none of them.
I mean, more than 1 apart. So if the user has 1, the computer has 3, the lower one wins. If the user has 2, then it's a tie. 3-1, which is also 2 apart, is I'll show up now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure. I mean, you may be right. I haven't done that pattern. If that pattern works, have a good time with it. But I haven't tried that pattern. What I do see is the pattern that he said, which is this one, and this one all are ties. And so it makes it very easy. That what I can say is, if the user equals the computer, then it's a tie. Okay, if the user equals a computer, it's a tie. Okay, what I want you to do, and then I will kind of chime in a few minutes with a way that I think you can get started, but I want you to start to work out the logic. So I want you to start drawing the flowchart or doing the pseudocode, whichever you like, that would solve this problem. Okay? And the first question that you can ask is user equal to computer? Because if user is equal to computer, then it's a tie. And that eliminates 3 of them right up front. Okay? If user is equal to computer, it's a tie. So start trying to think through the logic. Okay, so what I said was, you can ask the question here. I'm going to call it U and C. If U equals C, then it's a tie. So I have eliminated 3 of those with 1 simple question. And if no, what I would consider doing is asking, okay, is the user equal to 1? Or is the computer, actually, I think I'll ask computer. Doesn't matter, but since I have the computer having all the same numbers, 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, 3, 3, I think I'll ask that. So I can ask, is the computer equal to 1? And if the computer is equal to 1, what do I need to know in order to determine the winner? If the computer is 1, what do I need to know? And I need to know whether the user is equal to what 2 numbers do I need to know?
2 or 3.
Because 1 has already been taken care of, right? 1-1 is a tie. So I'm going to have the possibility of asking, is the user equal to 2? And if the user is equal to 2, and if not, I don't have to ask if the user is 3, because there's only 1, 2, and 3 are the only possibilities. So if the user is not 2, the user has to be 3. So over here, the user is 3. If I get a no to the question about is it 2, then the user is 3. So that's one way of getting started on this. There are other possibilities, but if you have problems getting started, this is one way of doing it. So start trying to think through the logic. And I will
keep
trying.
You could find your heart.
What?
As I said, if you find a way to ask the computer if the two values are separated by more than a single integer, then you can eliminate this whole guessing game here. Is the user equal to 2? Is the user not equal to 2?
Well, as I said, I haven't tested your theory, but number 2, I'm not sure I want to, because I want them doing it this way. because it's more a thought process of figuring it out. So, no, that's okay. And I just don't know whether your theory works or not. Wins. Okay, user wins is a 2-1, then user wins is a 2-3, but then user wins is a 1-3.
User wins is a 1-3?
Down or below.
No, the lower one would win, because if 1 is rock, 2 is paper, 3 is scissors, then if...
But you said something about then 1 separator.
Yeah.
Actually,
so,
go ahead.
So if, that would mean that if user has 1 and computer has 3, then the user wins, but if it's the other way around, the computer wins.
Okay. I think my way is easier. But go ahead and try closing the door. Yes. Okay. Well, right now I want you not to write the JavaScript. I want you to just work on writing either logic or pseudocode. So either a flowchart or a pseudocode. So I want you to basically take this as a starting point and build on it. So if the C is equal to 1, if it's not, then I'm going to check and see if C is equal to 2. Okay? So right now I want you to just swing through the logic, and then we're going to talk about ways that we can do it with compounds and that sort of thing, which I think is the one that cuts things down a lot, is we're doing it with compounds, some kinds of compounds, but you have to be careful. If you have questions, Carolyn and I are here for just that reason.
Don't want it to use arrays?
I wasn't I guess you can use a raise. If you want to use the words and everything, then you probably would be better off using a raise. If you use 1, 2, 3, I don't see any real need for it. But if you want to use it, go ahead. Okay. I would never object, but I don't see any terrible need with 1, 2, and 3. One of those places where I'd opt for paper and pencil.
Paper and pencil is a wonderful thing.
What is what with this?
With this?
I can't correct it.
Do you care if we moron proof this or not?
What?
Do you care if we moron proof this?
As long as you moron proof it with code you write, not code that you find elsewhere. You can improve as much as you want with code that you write. There are 1,000 versions of this on the web, and as I told the last class, I want you to use your own version. Okay, so play again.
What was the name? That's just like an object. It's not specifying or anything. It's like if I'm like the computer. It's like an
object. Yeah, no, it's just
naming.
Yeah.
Okay. And then your prompt is the same.
Yeah.
Well, play again.
Yeah.
Language.
some languages to contaminate.
So the U2, okay, so we've done it over here. If the computer equals 1 and the user equals 2, we know that means the user wins. So we're going to put out a message right here that says, user wins. Okay? If not, we know that the only other possibility is the 3, because 1 and 1 is a tie. 1 and 2 we've just taken care of. So 1 and 3 means computer wins. So we know this means computer wins. So that takes care of all of this area. So now we come over here and we're gonna say, oh, computer is in 1, what about if computer equals 2? And if computer equals 2, then we're gonna go back and ask about the user. So over here you're going to say, is the computer equal to 2? And if it is, then I have to go through these possibilities. 2 and 2 is a tie, so I only care about is the user 1. And if the user is a 1, then that's one thing. Otherwise, the only other possibility is the user is a 3. Some of you getting something that looks reasonable? When you're writing something this big, and I am very serious, that I test as I go along. So I would probably get it so that I had this much in there, and then on the else on the C=1, I'd write more to come. Put on a message, more to come or something. And I would test it. And because once you've written the whole thing, and you're missing a curly brace someplace, or you're missing something else someplace, you know, it is really hard to dig it out. But if you get it so that after I get a tie, I test and see if the tie works. And then I put in the, what about a C1? And the things I'm not testing, I just put a message that says more. And I keep moving through little by little and testing it. But writing the whole thing, I mean, it's got to be, you've got to go through it one tedious bite at a time, looking for what you did wrong. Because you did something wrong. No thanks. But that's one of the reasons why I wanted you to do the flowchart first. Now, if I look at this, hopefully you've seen enough so that I have one situation where I can write, if computer equals user, then it's a tie. Else, if computer equals 1, then ask if user equals 2. And if it is, I've got a message to put out. else, I've got another message to put out. Else, I'm going to ask, is computer equal to 2? All of this is going to involve a gazillion curly braces. Now my problem is, if I try to compound, I can start out with and say, if user equals computer or computer equals user, it doesn't much matter. And then I can say, okay, if C equals 1 and user equals 2. Well, if the computer equals 1 and the user equals 2, what is that 2-1? Is that the user wins? Okay. But what's the else? I don't know what the else is. Let's go back and look at the flowchart. If I look at the flowchart and I say, okay, if computer is 1 and user is 2, user wins. But if it's not true, which one is false? Is it user isn't 2, which in case I want to write computer wins, or is it the computer isn't 1, in which case I want to test computer equals 2. So that just, I've got a problem because my no's aren't the same. So, this would be a problem. Okay, it's a problem. Now, one of the other possibilities is to write a bunch of standalone ifs. So I say, if computer, again, the tie business, but I'm not putting that in here because I'm running out of room. So instead of this, I could say if computer equals 1 and user equals 2, put out the message that user won, and then stop. And now ask a totally different if statement. If computer equals 1, and user equals 3. What am I going to do there? Computer wins. And just write a whole series of standalone ifs without getting into else's. Just if computer 1 and user 2, ta-da. Next line. If computer equals 1 and user equals 3, ta-da. So I have a bunch of standalone ifs is one way of doing it. Another possible way of doing it is looking at all of the things that make the user win. So I've got 3 ways the user could win. Okay, the user wins if it's 2-1, the user wins if it's 3-2, and the user wins if it's 1-3. So I can combine those all into one if statement and say, if user equals 2 and computer equals 1, or user equals 3 and computer equals 2, or user equals 1 and computer equals 3, user wins. So I can combine all of the user wins into one big statement. If it's this, or if it's this, or if it's this. And that makes life really easy.
And it would have parentheses around, like, each.
You got to make sure that the ands are going to be resolved before the ors. Okay. So that's another possible way of doing it. There is a whole load of possibilities. But just if you get into using compound, you have to be very careful. Because remember, whenever you use a compound, if you have an else, it means anything that didn't cause that to be true. So anything that didn't cause C to be 1 and user to be 2 would come here.
Well, that's a whole lot of things. And so you've got a real problem if you try to compound it that way. If you compound it as standalone, if this, the user does this, new if statement, if this and this, and write them as separate if statements, then you are getting into the problem of the else. And if you write a very sophisticated if statement, you've made life easier. And you can write them all as single ifs, but if you write them all as single ifs, good luck with those curly braces. Because it's just keeping track of them all and making them all work is not pretty. Okay, we have about 10 more minutes. I'd like you to keep working on this, and so that if you have questions, and I'm not going to start anything new. So I'd like you to keep working on trying to figure out this logic. But if you have questions about other homework, you can also bring those up. I'll be around at 2, in and out, but I'll be around, and Carolyn will definitely be here. So if you're having problems in some of the other assignments, we're kind of skipping and going into assignment 3 because I'm doing that in class.
So this is the homework assignment due next week?
Yes. Part of it, there's 3 problems. This is problem 3 in it. Yeah.
Could you help me take a look at this? It's still where I'm getting my prompts. So, save it as HTML, but when I try to load it, it doesn't even load the window prompt.
Okay, script taking that variable, the computer, the window prompt, variable, the user. Okay. So you're basically having the computer, having 2 people put in the prompt at this point. And then you're saying, if the computer equals the user, document write, tie. Oh, that can't be like that. Take out those 2 quotes in the middle. Take out the 2 quotes in the middle. You'd either, yeah.
Okay.
And that will work, but you would have to do a concatenate if you wanted to have 2 separate levels. Save that and see if it works. See if that was nice enough to be the problem. Yeah, no, everybody says just that, and that's exactly what JavaScript is. Just that? You know, I was helping somebody this morning that spelled prompt without a T. Well, that meant the white screen of death. You need a T on prompt.
Now that I got that, it's probably going to be easy. The rest of it.
You know, we screw something else up there.
So, why? It's funny because I used the state one is a reference, and it has the BR in quotes, the answer.
Yeah, but it probably had a plus in between for concatenating.
It did, yep.
And that's what you were missing. So you could have kept the quotes as long as you put a plus in between those 2 quotes so that it was literal concatenated with literal.
Okay.
And that would work. Yes, ma'am. You don't look happy.
I'm still on the second job.